And welcome to a very, very long overdue podcast from The Practical Medium. And I am, as ever, your Practical Medium, Michelle Practically Speaking. So, it's been a while. And to explain where I have been would take a while. It's not the most scintillating stuff. It's more about aggravation, pain. Trying to find answers for what the hell's been going on, getting answers, and trying to heal what I've learned, which is basically my IT band decided to say, up yours, you spend too much time in a chair, and all these issues that you created for us, oh, geez, almost 40 years ago, or over 40 years ago when you broke a leg, is coming home to roost. So I will get to that in another podcast. And just give a brief overview of what it does to being just a sensitive, what pain does to you, what not being able to take control of your life and just float along the bottom for a while, just trying to get shit back together. So that, again, like I said, I will save that for another podcast. However, it is Halloween as I'm recording this, and no way I am going to miss the opportunity to put out a Halloween podcast. So I'm pretty sure I did one last year. But I haven't checked for a while. Anyway, so it is Halloween, and there's a topic that I'd like to talk about, and I've talked about it in the past, but there's, how do I put it, not new information, but I guess new insight that I have picked up, and I do have to shift a lot in my chair because it's part of my IT band issue, so I have to shift to get comfortable. I apologize in advance if my voice changes because I'm sitting far away from the microphone and then I lean in. I'm not kidding when I say this crap sucks. So it's not comfortable to sit in a chair for any length of time. And guess what I do for a living? Sit in a chair for lengths of time to write. So now that I'm past that little bit, let's get started. And the topic of today's Halloween podcast is how the living convince themselves that something is what it isn't. And I know that's a little vague and a little circular, but I'll get to why in a second. And this has to do with the insane asylums, the sanitariums, and everything else out there that people like to go to check out because they're spooky and haunted. And that they go in there, there's an expectation of certain people still there, and that other paranormal investigators or just caretakers run into them all the time. And it's like, oh, hi, you're still here kind of thing. Or it's spooky that these people, you know, they were gentle. Like, I remember on one Ghost Adventures, there was a gentle giant in life who still apparently is a gentle giant in death and hangs around. I don't doubt he's still there, but he's an exception as opposed to the rule. And I know that I've talked about in the past how the dead really don't stick around these places, and sometimes it's somebody else. But the living have a responsibility in the creation of the perception of a haunted house destination. And I will further clarify that shortly. But suffice to say that people have a tendency to create fears and then make them real for themselves, not that they are actually real. And this all comes out of an experience that Linda recently had, as she stated a place in Australia that had a reputation for being haunted by the previous residents. It was a repurposed property, and the people that used to stay there were not of the best quality, I guess you could say. I'm trying to find a nice way to put, they just weren't fit for society. So, mental illnesses, that kind of stuff. I'm just, again, trying to be a little, I'm dancing around, and I probably should just be more direct, and here I go shifting. Anyway, what happened was, now, if I've mentioned in the past, and people who have listened to the podcasts where we've talked, may have picked up that she's like a 100 gigawatt pipeline to the dead. She's just got all this amazing, incredible bandwidth. If anybody's going to pick up on the presence of the dead and other critters, it's going to be her, without fail, because all she has to do is tune in and she'll see the truth of what's going on there. And this is where she found the truth wasn't quite what everybody thought it was. And this is what's kind of inspiring tonight's podcast, because it's not to dissuade people from going to haunted houses or visiting these places as a general rule. It's just to temper your expectations of what's going on and be more objective than subjective when you go in. Because now there are times, like, you know, we've all seen it, where the ghost hunters get attacked or something weird goes on, and you know, they basically get what they were looking for because they stirred somebody up to the point they got pissed off enough to throw stuff at them. Good Lord. That's not my intel. That's Ken's intel. And it's to be more a bit compassionate about the people that were once there, because, again, they were once people too. And some of them still stick around, but not like you think. And this is, I'm going to tell Linda's story here about what she discovered, because it's very interesting in the sense of, huh, so what you're telling me is that when she filled me in, I'm said, so basically what you're telling me that this is all human imagination creating fear and stories about what's here, and there's just really nobody's home kind of thing. And she's like, that's pretty much about it. So she gets to this site, and it's been recently done, remodeled in the last few years. And she was told by her coworkers that this place is haunted. And they were all, some of them, oh, I can feel the fear of this place. I can feel the sadness, or I can feel the misery. And, you know, pick your negative emotion. They swore up and down that they could feel it when they walked up to the front gates, a front entryway, and that it was just miserable. And there are a bunch of people that won't stay there because they are convinced that the place is pure haunted and that they're going to get attacked, or they're going to get spooked, or whatever, you know, deep-seated fear we have, because we are still primal creatures at the base of our brains. And, you know, I don't know that I've ever been susceptible to that, but that's partially because of sensitivity. That's also partially because I'm PTSD, and, you know, partially because autism makes it harder for you to go get a good jump scare at times. But I try to go in and I try to get scared some places, and it just doesn't, I just don't, it's a slow burn. It's not a big woo scare, you know, kind of thing. So they're wasted on me. So she goes in, she gets there, she goes to her room, and she tells me that at one point when she had a moment that the taps in the bathtub turned on by themselves, and the TV went on and off while she was in the room. So she's just like, what's going on here? Do I have somebody who's trying to oblige me by turning on stuff to make me feel like it's haunted? Or is it something else? And I won't leave you in suspense. It turned out to be something else, because there apparently are timers that are on, like, the faucets in the shower, or some kind of remote control somewhere. I didn't ask for details, but apparently there is some kind of way to set the bath to run at a certain time. And the TVs also had the settings left from the previous occupants, so the TVs were turning themselves on because, well, something said turn on, and it was electronic, electrical energy from somebody who's dead. And she opened up and found nobody there, literally. The entire property, even though some of the buildings weren't quite finished to renovation, no one was home. So this feelings that her coworkers were talking about, their fear of staying there, which would lead them to stay elsewhere, were so strong and were so reinforced by other people and other people's comments and the reputation of the place, that they felt that something bad was going to happen to them from one of the crazy residents that used to live there. Well, not really. Didn't happen. She scanned over the time she spent there, for a few days, she scanned constantly. There was nobody. There may have been a stray person hanging around, because that's what people on the other side do, is that they travel through. But they know there was no residence. There was no one who had a reputation in life that was still there because when you're so tied to a place as a individual, you're supposed to stay there in death, I guess. Which is something I will get to shortly. But yeah, it was everything. It was created by the people that were coming there to stay at the hotel. They were afraid of the past of the property. And they thought that they were going to be attacked, or who knows what they thought. But it was so bad that they just were afraid of it. Yeah, you have this somebody who can sense what's going on say, no, it's not. This place is dead as a doornail. Nobody here, no one home. Get over yourselves, basically. So her entire stay, nothing happened. She cleared out the settings on the devices. Nothing ever happened again while she was there. And it was all she wrote. So herein lies a couple of questions. Why do we as humans set ourselves up for such a fearful situation? What's the point? Are we looking to scare ourselves? Is it flight or fight instincts checking in? And getting to that part of us that is afraid of the unknown. Because, again, primal creatures, we fear things that we don't understand. Or is it just somebody who is working themselves up into the scare because they are anticipating? You know, if people were to look at it logically, they wouldn't be able to answer these questions, I bet. Because there's nothing logical about these fears. They just are reacting to what other people have told them and their perceptions of these places. For all we know, this location she was at was a pleasant place for its residents, and that the residents were happy people, and that they were well treated, and nobody felt a need to call. They called it home because it was home to them, and it was a lovely place to be at home. But they don't feel a need to stay there in death. And I will get back to that whole, you know, the attachment stuff in a little bit. But, you know, when these people passed, they went home to mother, you know, and that's a strong feeling I got from when I was thinking about it. There's that people who were put in these places were separated from their mothers. This is not singling out saying that dads are bad or dads don't play a role in their disabled offspring's lives. It's just there's a strong feeling of wanting to be with mom, and in turn the rest of their family. But that's where their heart lies, and being separated from your family means being separated from your mother. And you know, it's a whole line of thinking and emotional investigation that's going to be outside of the breadth of this podcast. But if there's interest, I can always explore that too. So back to the people. If the place was just transitory for you in life, in terms of it was a place to go, but it wasn't where you felt was your true home, why are you going to stay there when you're dead? And if it was a pleasant place, there's not a whole lot to drive the living memory into the surrounding soil and buildings. It just doesn't, because light goes, you know, light is absorbed, but it's also reflected. And light is considered a positive thing for humanity and for the non-humanity. Light is always positive. So it's just not a place that holds you. It's not a place that grabs you. It's lovely, yes, but you're free. You're not held down by something that's trying to feed off the living and the dead, because it was never welcome there. It never made home, and the place was just not ever going to be a place of misery. So that happens too. I know in the States we have a bad reputation, deservedly so, because of our asylums and how lousy and gross and nasty they were when they were uncovered, and the conditions were uncovered in the late 70s, I want to say, early 80s. And believe it or not, Geraldo Rivera was one of those people who went and exposed them, and that caused the eventual shutdown of these asylums. So now I'm going to shift over into the whole aspect of who's at these places. If it's not the residents that were once there, right? Okay. Now, in contrast, yes, our asylums were miserable, nasty places. And you do have a lot of people who worked there and lived there who were sadists. They were not narcissists, sociopathic. They fed off of human misery. They fed off their inmate, you know, their the people that they were living there with. They fed off, and the guards, and the not the guards. Well, there were guards, but the people that were there to treat them didn't treat them right because they had an endless pool of victims. And yeah, the places that are miserable do absorb that energy. They do keep certain people around, or certain people, not keep, but certain people stay around because they're looking for the latest hit from a new victim of the living. But a majority, and I do mean a majority, of the residents that were once there don't stay. So I'm going to refer back to the Ghost Adventures where there was a gentle giant who lived at this one, and I'm sliding in my chair, so pardon me while I readjust. And they think that they caught him on camera while they were filming. And it's very possible he was still there at the time. But I would have to dial into the property to see if he's still there. And chances are he just didn't want to go to family. He didn't want to go home. That place was his home. And he just wants to be left alone kind of thing. And that's why he lurks in the basements and the underground passageways, because he's less likely to be spotted. The people that do know he's there, like the property caretakers, just say, "Hey, how's it going?" You know, it's like, "Hey, Ralph, how?" It's like, "Good morning, Ralph. Good morning, Sam," and do their shift change, that kind of thing. You get used to the residents, but they're very few and far between. You don't get a lot of permanent residents at these places because after a while, you find that there are better things to go on to. Those who hold on to their mental, I'm getting a bunch of D words, defective, disturbed, deranged. So this isn't me speaking. This is just this is me funneling or channeling stuff through, and I'm getting these words. These are words they may have used to refer to themselves as, but I'm trying to be non-derogatory. Here's another D word, towards them, because, it's not necessary. It's just that's who they picked to be, what they picked to be, and that's their life. So in that regard, they are still there because they don't want to, they're just not ready to let go. But over time, there's nothing there for them anymore. The places are abandoned. There's just nobody, there's no activity, or they're repurposed into something else and it's not what they know. So eventually they will move on to the other side's version of the asylums and the sanitariums and yada yada. Or they just finally decide that it's not worth holding on to the human traits of these mental illness and clean their act up and move on to become productive members of society on the other side, which is a thing. We all like to be productive members of society, whether we're physical or not. And eventually these people do become, but you know, they move on to rejoin the society on the other side, whatever society that they came from, whatever society, whatever culture, what have you, they go back to it, and they leave behind everything that they once were as a human. And why would they not? Because it means release from misery. So clean, you know, leaving behind that shell feels great. It feels clean. It's cleansing. It is lightening. You don't have to deal with it anymore. And you can just be who you want to be. So, you know, why stick around and mess with the living unless you're a psychopathic, sadistic piece of shit, which there are many of that go, you know, and those are what sometimes are called, and I hate to use this word, lower vibrations. It's not really vibration. It's a lower density. It's a lower frequency of existence, and it's being in the muck, and it's not wanting to leave the muck because it just feels so good to you. I'm saying you as a general you, it feels so good to the person in question that they don't want to leave it, and that is what creates the dark side of things. And these asylums, like I said, they're abandoned or they're repurposed, or there's just nothing that because they're older buildings without modern building requirements, they don't always get reused. They might, you know, they might become an abandoned wing of a property. Whatever, but they're quiet and they're great places to prey on the living and the unsuspecting. And that is who you will find in these locations. You're not going to find the previous residents by and large. You're going to find those who want to feed off the living and get what the living have to offer, which is delicious energy that's stronger than anything else. I mean, refrigerators are a great source of them, but you know, for energy for these people. But if you don't have a refrigerator, and I know I'm being a little strange here, I'll get back to that. Well, a human's the next best thing because we generate all kinds of energy as we go throughout our day. I mean, right now, I'm shot to hell because it was a long day of doing stuff, but I somehow managed to find more adrenaline and energy to do this podcast. So, you know, I'm an example. I've talked about, and I'll backtrack to the refrigerator because I was just thinking about that in the back of my head. It used to have lots of, in the past, it used to make lots of knocks and cracks and noises, like people were wrapping their knuckles on it. That was the sound of people, of the dead drawing energy from it or trying to get my attention. And I would say that maybe I overstuffed my fridge and my freezer and that the frost cycle wasn't working properly. No, my freezer's still pretty stuffed, and even though I've got less stuff in there now, it's still loaded. So I should be getting, if that were mechanical, I should be getting those noises. I haven't in months. So whoever was using that for their battery is probably using my pain for their battery and keeping me in pain longer. But again, it's a little goofy sounding without context, and I will probably do a podcast to talk about that in the near future because I'm finally starting to come out of it. I'm finally fixing things. I'm finally getting better, although it's slow. And I will just say this much. Soft tissue injuries suck. So now that I've sidetracked on that, I'll go back to the whole who's at the asylums. You do have so people aren't. Let me try this again. I need to reshift myself. People who don't have a body, they don't have the body chemicals to influence their mind and their way of thinking so as strongly as they once did. It is still there. But the chemicals just aren't being produced in mass quantities. But it doesn't mean you can't be mentally defective. It doesn't mean that you, like for me with my autism, that will be something I will bring with me to the other side when I die. You know, whoever knows, when decades from now. Because it is becomes a part of my personality. Even though I've been through that multiple lives, this one leaves, each one leaves an imprint or impression on our personality. And it sticks with us. It sticks with us in life. It sticks with us in death. That's another thing I should probably talk about in another podcast. But long story short, who I was in another life is who I am now. But now I have something extra that will become another facet to my personality. So now apply that to somebody who has gone to and plumbed the depths of mental hell. And it leads them to, if they so choose, they can go down a path of being that in death. And that takes a lot of energy to feed. So where are you going to go for that energy? You're going to go to the places where people love to get scared. And the asylums and all these places I keep talking about tend to open up for Halloween. And people go in expecting the worst. And they expect to be attacked, and they expect to find evidence of these people who were once residents. Well, that's why people don't always come out with the best results. They don't come out with the best evidence. Some people get lucky, and somebody decides to show up and say cheese for the camera, or will come and talk to the spirit boxes, just to, you know, provide a thrill. But they're not living there full time. They're done with that. The pieces of crap or what are hanging around and getting their annual feast, so to speak. It's like, I guess you could call it Thanksgiving for the dead because they get to feast on all the good, the yummy energy that the living put out. Jesus, that's not me either. I know where that came from. And they're just they're going to disappear and go away until they've sensed that somebody is looking for another thrill. So the people that the living that go to these places, they're getting themselves worked up. They don't realize that it is them doing that, and they don't realize that they are drawing on other people's fear and building upon it and creating a sense of dread, creating, you know, the feeling of anxiety, misery, fear. When if you were to go in there on any other day in the daylight and just go in with a clear head, it would feel like any other empty building, just kind of a little sad, a little dusty, a little rotted out, but very empty. And so next time you decide to go into a haunted house, consider that. Are you there to be scared? Do you want to be scared? Are you there? Are you creating the scariness and paying a pretty penny for it? Because I've seen some of these tickets. Holy shit, the prices. Or are you just going because you just want to see who's there? Are you going to because you want to see what the rumors are all about? What is your state of mind? Ask yourself this. Now, it's like my brain just completely quit, so the line went dead on that one. But basically, go into the haunted houses with an open mind, but don't expect yourself to be, you know, if you want to be scared, you will be scared. If you think it's a bunch of hokey bullshit, that's what your experience is going to be. But ultimately, people create the atmosphere of these places, by and large, before they walk in the door. And they think that what happens to them is real. And sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. And if you're not a sensitive, like Linda or me, and you know, anybody who is in the set, who basically has some sensitivity, you're not going to know the truth of what's going on. So you're basically kind of being hoodwinked. But that's okay, because that's part of life. That's part of experiences. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not saying people are suckers. It's more along the lines of examine yourself, examine your motivations, and if you really want a place to be haunted and you really want to be attacked, well, you're going to get it. Not always. But if somebody can deliver, they will. I guarantee that. So, on that note, I'm about to the end of the half hour, and I need to crash, but I wanted to get my Halloween in. And just, again, everybody go out there, be safe, be happy, enjoy the night. It is truly a night where the veil is the thinnest, and I'm using that colloquially. It's the veil is something more than the veil, but if you've listened to past podcasts of mine, you know that Ken calls it the other side of the fence because it's more what it's like. We can look over the fence like Wilson in Home Improvement, and we can talk to our neighbors, but we don't always interact with them in the way we'd like. But on that note, enjoy your experiences. Use your sixth sense, which you can dig in, which you can easily access because it's actually your proprioception system. So use your nervous system to judge what's around you. And if you don't feel anything, well, you don't feel anything. And that means nobody's there. So you're just going to have to keep moving until you find somebody. On that note, be safe. Enjoy yourself. Have fun. Don't let the turkeys get you down. Don't let the doubters get you down. Dress up. Do your thing. Don't worry about messing with the residents that are still at these places. They know what time of year it is, and they either go somewhere else to hang out or they just put up with it. It's the agreement between the living and the dead that's never been spoken. But who cares? It is what it is. And I say who cares as a kind of a tossway, but there's nothing we can really do about it, so we just do it. Because it's no harm, no foul, and everybody gets something to enjoy, remember, explore, and think about in the future. So on that note, I'm going to close out. Thank you all for listening, who've been waiting for me to show up again. Now that things are getting better, I probably can get back to a regular schedule because I'm not drained dry all the time from this pain. Find my light at the end of the tunnel. All right. You all take care. Love you all for showing up and listening. And have a happy Halloween. And we will talk soon.